call to order the Natural Resources Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Tuesday, March 29th, 2005. And we are working with Senate Bill 5511, which is the budget bill of the Department of Energy. I'm going to open a public hearing. Oh, we got technical difficulties.
Broke the tape.
I get to do this all over here.
Now
we're going to do this again. Call to order the Natural Resources Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Tuesday, March 29th, 2005. And we're here today to do Senate Bill 5511, which is the budget bill for the Department of Energy. So I will open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5511. And our illustrious LFO analyst, Ms. Brown, would you please set the stage for us?
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, you have several pieces of information that was distributed to you this afternoon. The first is a memo titled Phase 2 Materials. It just briefly outlines, again, the agency's mission, high-level budget issues for you. There were no budget notes during the interim, and the Secretary of State's Audit Division did audit their loan program. No significant findings there. There are two reports attached for your information that the agency is required to produce. The memo does note on the second one for the state energy efficient design that the report wasn't done yet. The agency came in with that about an hour ago, so that is now part of this packet, so, despite what the memo says. Also is attached for you your final, well, not your final, your first round cut at the subcommittee rankings for this agency. So the spreadsheet that was submitted to co-chairs is also attached. And then a draft of the performance measures for the agency as they currently stand. When we get into work session, the subcommittee will be asked to establish specific targets for measures and formally adopt measures for this agency. So that is attached for you there. The other pieces of information that you have that we will deal with in this hearing is a packet on the governor's recommended budgets that Jim Gores with that budget and management will cover in a little bit. And then the last packet that you have before you is the work session recommendations from LFO. So if we go into work session later in this meeting, this is what I'll be looking from.
Thank you very much. Any questions about the LFO discussion of the paperwork that you find in front of you? We'll call forward then the agency to respond to phase one questions and respond to the priority list that we did last week in this committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mike Graney, Director of the Oregon Department of Energy. We did present to the committee a number response to a number of questions, additional information. I think we have copies of, and I think there's a number of copies for the audience as well.
And Madam Chair and members, these responses should have been distributed to your office about a week ago. There are extra copies if you don't have them.
I need a copy.
Did anybody actually bring copies? I think everyone needs copies, Monica.
Some of the issues that were covered was an update on the proposed Turner Power Plant, which the department has recommended that proceeding be terminated. And our siting council is meeting, in fact, a week from this Friday to take action on our recommendation. That is because of the fact that application has been delayed three times over 3 years at the applicant's request, and they recently asked for an extension of at least one more year while they evaluate the market situation. We just felt that that is unfair to the community of Turner, that they should make a decision one way or the other. So we're recommending dismissal of the application. There are questions about whether there are oil refineries or why there's not oil refineries in Oregon. We've addressed that, as well as potential for hydroelectricity in terms of new facilities in Oregon. The potential really is for new small hydro, and we're not aware of any plans by Bonneville to substantially increase the capacity today of the existing large dams. There was a request for information about our work with schools that are covered by the public purpose charge. We've provided information on that, as well as information on the number of tax credits and the cost to process them, both the residential and the business energy tax credit. We also provided information on the state energy efficient design program. That's the program where we're working with other state agencies for their facilities. That's the last page of the handout. I know Representative Schaffler, in particular, you had a number of questions about actual agency performance and annual savings, savings actually produced. That last page has a chart of a number of the recent buildings that were covered in the last 2 years and the annual savings that we've actually monitored and verified. So there's some good energy savings there from those projects. That will result in direct reduced cost to the state agencies involved there. I'm sure I'd be happy to go into more
questions
detail.
Questions or comments on the agency responses? Thank you very much. Let's move on then and talk about the priority listing that we did in the last week's session. Can you talk from the agency's perspective about the work that the committee did?
Madam Chair, I think we don't have any disagreement with what the committee did. Most of the priorities that you mentioned in your rankings dealt with our nuclear and emergency response issues and Hanford-related issues as our top priorities. I certainly can't disagree that they're extremely important, and they were in our top half in varying degrees anyway, so I don't have any problem with the rankings that you have.
Okay. Does anyone on the committee want to comment on the work that we did? This one was pretty straightforward. Okay, let's consider that issue settled then. And let's go on to talk about the performance measures.
So which hand that's the...
Well, I'm kind of thinking that we would be best off to respond to the proposed performance measures, which is on the back of the LFO recommendation.
Say on the back
of the final page of the work session
recommendation.
Yes, that.
Okay, it's page 2.
It's
actually inside page 1 of that.
Okay. Ms. Brown, do you want to take us through these so that you can discuss what the committee talked about and why you formatted them in this way?
Sure. Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, during round one, there was some discussion over the performance measures of the agency and how, I don't know that it was felt by all of the members, but there was some discussion over the measures that they had seemed to be very high level outcome. Why would it be a good idea to have energy policy in the state? They weren't at a kind of an intermediate level giving you indicators of the agency's management of particular programs. And so there was some discussion of could we have measures developed that were managerially focused and what was the return on investment of specific programs rather than kind of the high-level aggregated numbers. So some of the proposals that are here that you'll work through in work session are talking about breaking out their number one performance measure. They had been, again, aggregating all of their programs to identify savings. So the suggestion had been that you break it out by the business energy tax credit, the residential energy tax credit, small-scale loans, and the statewide program for energy-efficient design for state buildings. So that is in some of the potential adjustments to their first performance measure. On top of that, there was some discussion on whether a return on investment, how much are you spending in the tax credit to get those energy savings, was discussed. So the proposal would be that the agency work in the interim with LFO and BAM and then come back to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee to identify specific targets and how the measure would be calculated. So that's that first set of proposals. So you have on what had been their performance measure number one, there is a recommendation to modify and then add the return on investment piece there by program.
So, committee members, I think that what this will help the next group of people that sit on this committee to do is to have some a couple of different ways to judge how whether these programs are actually performing at the desired level by having some data that's broken out by program. Can the agency comment on this? Is this going to work from your perspective?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think it will. Most of this information we have or have or can pull together, and I think these are workable. You know, and if particularly with the option to report to the joint committee in the interim on any changes that are necessary, I think this will be helpful for us in terms of having more specific performance measures.
Thank you. Senator Shields.
As I'm looking at this, is the bold print the new part, and are you keeping in it the higher level, like annual fossil fuel savings and trillion BTUs from Department of Energy Conservation and Renewable Resources Program? What's the deal?
Madam Chair and Senator Shields, I think the proposal would be to modify the one that they would report to you would be the lower level savings from each of the individual programs broken out. And then if the agency wanted to keep the aggregate number internally, they certainly could do that.
Madam Chair, I would ask why it's either or. Why not both and?
It could be both. I think that...
Follow what I'm saying. I like the idea of the high-level stuff because it gives us a picture of this universe that we live in and the particular tax credits which give you a measurement.
So what you're proposing is to retain the original one and then add the disaggregated ones.
Well, I don't know quite how you want to do it. Some of you were here and some of you weren't here when we went through this the first time.
Madam Chair, if I might, I think having the overall total would be helpful because we have other programs. These are probably the best four in terms of representative sample, the largest ones, but we do have a number of other programs that we would include in that overall total as well.
And I think there would be value to retaining the original one and then adding the four breakout ones and then adding the second part of it, too. So I think that would be a fine recommendation. Does anybody want to comment on that? Have any feelings either way?
Maybe I've surprised everybody, but as you recall, last time these four measures, I felt, and I said this on the record, were kind of dismissed out of hand, and I didn't appreciate that, especially when we didn't consult with the Department of Energy first. And as I look at them now, I'm saying to myself, well, what's the matter with a 40,000-foot view? After all, we're talking about global warming and a lot of other big issues in general. So why not keep them?
Okay.
Is there anybody? Am I out in left field, Senator
no.
Bates?
I go right there. It breaks it down. What you try to get to, I think.
So
if you want to get in one of each one of these programs was successful, you also want to know what the total effect is.
Yeah. So rather than have modify on the top one, you could just put retain or something like that. And then add the second pieces of it. I guess add the two breakouts. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's continue on down here and talk about carbon dioxide emissions.
Again, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, the proposal would be to delete it as a measure reported to the legislature. Again, I think the focus, the discussion was having measures that were management-related measures be reported to the legislature, certainly open for discussion, and felt that this was a higher level. Certainly the agency could keep it internally for their own tracking. Again, given the conversation on the previous measure, it sounds like we might want to retain all of the current four and then just add on the more specific. So I mean, certainly up for your discussion.
Can I have some input on whether you want this one to be kept internally and deleted from the information that the next subcommittee will get, or do you want to retain this one as a measure that the next subcommittee will get?
I just have this is carbon dioxide issues. Is that what we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. Carbon dioxide emissions from burning fossil fuels.
One of the questions that was asked, number four of the responses, that I mean, the Earth's atmosphere is about 99% of other of gases, nitrogen, oxygen, 0.035 carbon dioxide. And I know that carbon dioxide is this global warming thing, but when you think about, if you take a football field, it's only about 3 inches in the football field. It's a carbon dioxide, and is it? I mean, say it went to 0.05. what kind of shape are we going to be in? Are we just going to do this on a political basis where we're talking about global warming?
But no, the department can set me straight, or Representative Dingfelder can set me straight because she'd know it a lot better than I do. But the reality is that 380, okay, is double what it was at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. So what we had was all of history up until 1800, and it was about half what it is now. And the point is that the burning of all the coal, gas, and everything else has taken what was an ambient level on planet Earth, and it's gone like this.
Well, in comparison, I want to see
what but
in comparison, if you got this much out of the football field.
I understand that part. But this is the part that creates the global warming.
Doesn't it help plants grow carbon dioxide?
The science is pretty complex, like you said. If you want to get into what it does the oceans, and sink the oceans for carbon dioxide, we'll be here all day.
Just keep it
having,
in
having
there.
Having said all that.
Go ahead, Senator.
Let's keep it.
I think it's a measure.
Are really pushing.
When you look at the first measure you're talking about, you're talking about savings in BTUs, and you're talking about return on investment. When you do those calculations, you know how much carbon dioxide it would take to build those same amount of units. And so keeping it in there probably doesn't take much effort on your part, I would say. It's something that's readily available just by converting. We've gone from solar or some other form to build this many BTU units. And we know how much carbon dioxide it would take from a coal plant or a gas-fired plant. So you kind of know what you're talking about from that point of view. When I look at your prospectus, your magazine you put out quarterly, you talk about those all the time, so you must have those figures. I would suggest that you would make this match up with the ones above it and say that, as your second thing here, you do for the same four programs what the reduction in carbon dioxide's been, because you've got the figures at your fingertips, and I think a lot of people would like to see that number.
Wouldn't that be a reasonable thing? It is well taken, and that is the issue that I have with this one is that it doesn't help me to understand whether the department is impacting this or doing a good job. And so what I would be more interested in was just what Representative Bates was talking about, if it was possible to develop
a
measure that related to the programs and carbon dioxide.
Relate it back to Steve. If I one of them is not functioning well, you can look at that program and say why.
Madam Chair and members, I should have pointed this out earlier. The agency does not keep the specific information on this. The U.S. Energy Information Administration actually prepares the report, and they haven't prepared it, appears, since 2000. So we don't even have data for the last 3 years, and I'm not sure the agency knows, has any indication from the federal agency on when they might update this report. So on this particular one, these are not statistics that the agency is keeping internally, is my understanding.
Mr. Graney, is it possible for the agency to relate carbon dioxide emissions to the tax credit programs?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think we can. We would have to make some assumptions of the fuel that's being displaced, but we can do that based on, you know, the information we have on state energy consumption. I guess the other point I would make, too, is that I would like to see this retained as a performance measure, because this is one of the few benchmarks we have that's related to energy directly, and that's been part of the problem we've had with having just the very broad, high-level performance measures. We haven't had good benchmarks to tie them to, and this is one that we have. And
I think that was the direction for the department, to continue to keep it, but to have it be internal. But Senator Shields, would it fit your where you want to go with this if we could ask the department to develop some performance measures that paralleled the structure of the programs and showed what those programs did to reduce?
And I think it would be appropriate that they have from now until August to report back to the audit committee as per the other thing. And this is not something you can do on the fly.
Yeah.
Chair.
Representative Shelton.
Oregon is not an island, and we don't live all alone. How much impact is, like, China, for example, having on this, blown over into our airspace?
Can you measure?
I mean, we could probably do everything imaginable here in Oregon, and possibly not even see a blip in this number right here. Is that am I wrong in making that point?
Representative Schaffler, China's industrialization and India's, for that matter, which they're both making substantial industrialization efforts, what path they take will have a huge impact on the amount of CO2 gases emitted. And they're at a crossroads now of either going heavily into coal, heavily into natural gas, or heavily into new technologies, solar and other renewable energy. But
Madam Chair, I have no problem leaving this in here, but I think this would be more useful in public, showing people the concern and their own habits and how they, their lifestyles and what they do and consume or don't consume, rather than a measurement on what this department's doing. Because to be honest with you, I don't think we can do all the great things in the world here in Oregon, whatever that might be, as green as this carpet. And I don't know if we can make a difference as far as the overall air quality in small communities, like when you get that, you know, when stuff's trapped inversion in Portland or Medford, then I think we can make a difference there. But I'm not so sure if in the end the whole thing we can really make a whole lot of difference,
Madam,
just locally.
I had to tell you, and Mike, set me straight if I'm wrong. CO2 is part of the greenhouse gas combination. We had a report on Friday in the Environment and Energy Committee when we were at Portland State in Portland Friday. One of the scientists that actually has worked to develop the reports over the years and has, for instance, briefed presidents on this issue, spoke to us. She happens to be a distinguished professor at OSU. In their document, they actually pointed out that Oregon, Washington, and California, just those three states, at the present time, even though India is starting to follow our lead, and China is certainly farther along in following our lead, but those three states, Oregon, Washington, and California, right now, produce more greenhouse gases than the nation of India. It just blew my mind to see that statistic. That's because we're so developed. We're into it. We're burning all kinds of fuel. They haven't got there yet. God help us when all of the developing nations get to the point where they're burning as much, you know, fossil fuel as we are.
Well, I do think that it would be valuable information in terms of that whole issue to add a parallel performance measure that talks about the total amount of carbon dioxide emissions and then breaks it out amongst the programs. So you've got the same kind of construction. So let's go ahead and add that one in. And also let us have the department to continue to keep this as an internal measure, the original one, because it also relates to the Oregon benchmarks, and so there needs to be that continuity there. Senator Nelson.
We have to make a differentiation between man-made and natural cause carbon dioxide. I mean, as I understand it, the biggest polluter in the Northwest right now is Mount St. Helens.
We're going to put a cap on that, too.
Just put a lid on it.
Well, yeah, that's a filter system, you know.
This is some arcane kind of Senate humor that being exposed.
These guys just want to deal with reality. St. Helens is suing out hundreds of billions of tons of this. We can't stop it.
Moving right along here, Ms. Brown.
I do want to make one other comment about these programs, because I think the real value of these programs is potentially not how much we actually do cut down, greenhouse gases and we're conservative in Oregon, but this allows Oregon companies and Oregonians to pioneer new technology in this area. It's still about twice as expensive to a kilowatt from alternative energy, but it used to be 20 times as much. Now it's about twice as much. And if we don't fund these programs, we'll never get that technology up to a mass production level where it will become viable. And then some of these third world countries can make the jump directly, just as they made the jump from phone systems to cell. They didn't have lines in between. They made the complete jump in the cellular line, and which may not be a good thing for them, but we won't go there. The technology you're developing as a result of this, and Oregon being one of the leaders in developing technology, is not only good business for Oregon, but leads the world in some areas. And that's, to me, it's the most important part. Now, while it relates back to these measures, if we're putting money into programs that aren't producing, then we need to know that. Because these are tax credits. These are essentially subsidies to these programs, whether we like to look at it that way or not. They really are. We want to make sure that the money is going into technologies and developing technologies that really work. And I think that's what the co-chairs are trying to get to.
Yeah.
And I agree with that.
That's good.
Okay, moving along, we're going to be doing customer satisfaction with a deletion and an addition.
That's right, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee. The Department of Administrative Services and the Oregon Progress Board has been working to develop kind of a statewide customer satisfaction rating, and they will be doing surveys to that effect. So you will see in every agency's performance measure either the option to delete a current measure if the agency has a customer satisfaction measure currently, deleting it and adding or retaining both measures. So here you're seeing the agency currently sends out a survey to some of their individual programs, and that's what you're seeing here on measure 3. The recommendation for work session would have been to delete that one in opting for the statewide measure, which is on the second page on the bottom.
I prefer the new measure that's been developed by DAS because I think that it breaks out the customer satisfaction information and will give the next group of people doing this job a lot more kind of a finite, focused look at whether they're doing a good job or there's room for improvement in different areas rather than just a generalized measure. So I would support deleting the original customer satisfaction measure and adding the one that's at the bottom of the list.
And it is in the white line across the top, a percent of customers rating their overall satisfaction with the agency average or excellent, and then the A, B, C, D, and E. Is that the way it works?
Madam Chair and Senator Shields, that is correct. There would be an overall rating, and then there would be the specific one on timeliness, accuracy, helpfulness, expertise, and information availability.
And that black stuff in between is what was deleted?
What was the proposal to delete is on page 1 at the bottom, the agency's current 1 to 5 ranking on satisfaction.
Okay.
Any other comments on that? Representative Dingfelder.
Thank you, and I apologize because when you were here originally, I think it was a day that I was in Water Committee. I guess I have a question just about, and maybe you have this discussion, about, do you set goals? Because I know one of your missions is to work with businesses to try to promote energy conservation programs through the state. And I understand this performance measure, if I'm understanding this right, is to look at the, once you work with these companies, what is the satisfaction of the customer? But do you set goals on how many businesses you want to be outreach to? And I'd be interested to know, are you saying, we want to reach out to 40% in 2007, or 2006? And are you...
If I could interject, Representative Dingfelder, I think that the discussion around performance measures that we've had, certainly at the co-chair level, have been to try to avoid putting measures in place that just count widgets and to consider the outcomes of the program. And I think that the kinds of things that we're measuring in the performance measures that we've discussed already are the place that you want to get to, where you're actually looking at whether the function of the programs is being attained or not.
Maybe the question is, do you set those goals? And we don't have it in a performance measure, but it's a goal that the agency looks at.
Madam Chair, Representative Dingfelder, we do. We do both by programs and by general area. In fact, we've recently updated our strategic plan. That's an internal operations plan for our different programs and activities. So we do that. And I'd be happy to share that plan with you and with the committee.
Okay. Let's go ahead and talk about the nuclear safety emergencies performance measure.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, performance measure number 4 was not a favorite of the co-chairs, as you probably remember. I think primarily because they got a good chuckle out of the graphing of zeros, but the measure overall, I think probably worth the consideration of, this is a measure of how many corrective actions were identified when the drill occurred, and so the target appropriately is probably zero. You don't want major findings to come out of your drills potentially. So this is a measure of saying essentially the drills did occur and there were no significance found by the feds. But for your discussion, proposal was to keep the measure, but potentially not graph zero.
What would you graph then?
It was a straight line on the axis.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Am I reading this correct? The state and counties within 50 miles of an operating commercial nuclear power plant are prepared for nuclear safety emergencies. That list is for a measure?
Mm-hmm.
Do we have one within 50 miles of operating?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, we do. The nuclear power plant on the Hanford Reservation, Columbia, that is operating. The old Whoops 2, it's called Columbia Generating Station now. And we do have...
We have counties
within the 50-mile radius, and we do emergency planning.
The
federal facilities are all shut down, and there were a number of operating facilities, including power reactors and power plants that were on the federal process of creating weapons, and there were other facilities as part of that weapons production process. Those have all been shut down, and the federal agency is focusing just on cleanup now. But there's one commercial nuclear power plant on the Hanford site that's owned by Columbia Generating Station. It's a consortium of a number of publicly owned utilities in the state of Washington, and that does operate.
Was that part of the Whoops thing?
Yes, that was Whoops 2. That's the only... one of the Whoops, there were going to be 5 plants. That's the only one that was ever finished, and that is operating and has been for probably about 15 years.
Thank you.
The facility in Washington State, is it the subject of this performance measure?
Yes.
Because it's within the 50 miles.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
So, Representative Shoffer.
And these are just energy-generating facilities. How about nuclear reactors? Are you, does Reed College have a nuclear reactor? I believe it does.
Madam Chair, Representative Shoffler, it does, and Oregon State does too. Very, very small research reactors.
So, are you, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Are you the one monitoring and you're the department monitoring and overseeing all that. And how many of those are out there?
Yes, Madam Chair. Representative Schaffler, just the two at Reed and at Oregon State. They're very small. I mean, the reactor itself is the size of this desk, maybe, or a little smaller. There are safety considerations, you have to be aware of it. It doesn't present the same type of issues as a large power plant. But we do oversee and we do inspect both facilities, and we do work with both universities' nuclear departments to assure safe operation of those two facilities.
One very quick, and then the security. These are some hard security areas, I hope.
They have, along with all the other nuclear facilities, have upgraded security since 9/11.
Thank you.
Well, I guess we look forward to the continued flatline of this performance measure.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, let's move ahead here.
Madam Chair, the fifth performance measure or proposal to be added there is, again, a discussion of the internal processing of the applications of tax credits and facility sitings. There's some discussion about how efficiently those are moving forward. You know, the agency is doing some work now to try and get the residential tax credit application process, which is much more administrative than the business energy tax credit, to get to an online application process. So they're moving in that. But that performance measure would need some development on what are appropriate targets and how well would you manage, what targets should the agency be achieving for processing times.
Okay.
So that's a proposal to develop a measure in those areas.
And let's take the next one also along with this.
And the next one, really, you're going to see some components of the prior measures, but this one is really kind of focusing around the school programs that are out there, both with the federal money, settlement money, as well as the public purpose money that is now being invested in energy audits for schools. So, again, the proposal was to have them work on a return on investment type of measure, as well as reporting how many energy audits were completed, how many are left to be done, and what the percentage of measures installed were and what kind of savings were being achieved. So just really breaking out that program in much more detail so that members know the effectiveness of the money being spent in that area.
Okay. And then I don't know if this was discussed in the subcommittee previously, members, but the process for changing performance measures requires that the agency check in with the joint interim audit committee and go through a question and answer process, and then that's kind of the start of it. But from our go over the perspective of the legislature, that's where the check in occurs on the proposal from the agency. So is there any discussion on these two that will be finalized in the interim at the joint legislative audit committee? Okay, great. So then I think that concludes the discussion around the performance measures. And what we'll move into now is a discussion on the budget detail. And Mr. Greeny, you're next on my agenda. If you have anything that you'd like to talk to the committee about.
Madam Chair, I guess in the interest of time, because we did in the first phase spend a good bit of time on the budget itself, I'd be happy to at least initially defer to Jim Gores and to Monica Brown for if you'd like, and then I'd be happy to answer any follow-up questions.
Great. Let's get Mr. Gores then to give us the world according to DAS here, and committee members, if you have any questions as we go through this, don't hesitate to ask.
Yes.
Mr. Gores.
Hello. Good morning or good afternoon, Chairwoman and representatives. This is my name is Jim Gores. I'm with the Department of Energy, or Oregon Department of Administrative Service Budget Management Division. And what you have in front of you is this presentation here. And I'm just going to go through this fairly quickly. But on page 3, this just kind of gives you a breakdown of the natural resources program area as it reflects all funds. As you can see, energy is about 15% of the natural resource program area. On page 4, governor's principal budget, this agency, due to the diversity of the issues it deals with, it fell primarily into the following three principles: public safety, economic development, and livability in the environment. Then on page 5, this is kind of a breakdown of the different funding types that this agency has. As you can see, a vast majority of this agency's budget for the governor's recommended budget is non-limited other funds, about $184.7 million. Other funds, $18.1 million, and federal funds, $5.5 million. A lot of the sources of their revenues are contracts for emergency response planning, energy conservation achievement, energy education programs and hazardous waste cleanup, and energy facility site applications and certificate renewal fees, and then assessments on energy and petroleum suppliers.
Senator Shields.
What percentage is the hazardous waste cleanup part of the first bullet, or of the whole budget?
I would actually rather defer to Mike to answer that question.
Okay.
Deputy Senator Shields, the dollar amount we have is a small portion because it's just dealing with radioactive material. So it's our work.
Where are you at Hanford working from? What document have you got?
This is the DAS document.
I know the DAS document, but you're looking at a different one.
Right. The detail on our budget, where you can see the line items, is on page 26 of the notes. This notebook.
Senator, also, when we go into the budget for the Department of Environmental Quality, we're going to be dealing with a lot more with hazardous waste cleanup.
Okay. Thank you.
Department of Environmental Quality doesn't do radioactive work and don't do hazardous, so that's where the split really is.
Okay, I'll continue on. Page 6, as you can see, this small-scale or state energy loan program makes up most of the non-limited other funds that you saw, 184.7, and then operations of the agency incorporates about $23.6 million of their budget. On page 7 is just a further breakdown of how the money is spent. For your information, I won't go through the information, but I broke it out by other funds, federal funds, and then other funds, non-limited, just so you have that information in front of you. One thing I would like to note is that personal services is all in operations, and none of it is run off of the other funds, non-limited. But as you can see, about 6% of the agency's full budget is personal services, 4% is services and supplies, and then they have the substantial portions of their budget is debt service and special payments. A large amount of that, once again, is that small-scale or state energy loan program.
So, Mr. Gores, would we be correct in assuming that the personal services is actually the payroll expenses?
Yes. Then page 8. This is just kind of a general breakout of kind of the history of their budget from 1999 to 2001 until now. As you can see, the agency does not have any general fund or lottery funds. And once again, just breaks out the other funds non-limited and federal funds. And then also their positions and FTE for your information.
Why has there been a decrease in the federal funds from 3.05 to 5.07? Is that just getting less money for certain programs or for certain programs sunset? Or?
Madam Chair, Representative Dingfelder, our federal funds were down primarily in the area of the U.S. Department of Energy's energy conservation in the industrial and transportation sector. Also, termination of the federal funds for the Lakeview groundwater monitoring program we were doing for the cleanup of the radioactive waste there. There also has been some money that initially started out as federal funds that has gone through another entity that then comes to us as other funds. And so that's part of the reason for the increase in other funds that we have in our budget as well.
Follow up?
So some of these are pass-through funds,
yeah.
And then do we have an administration fee on them, or they're being passed through directly to? For instance, when you talk about groundwater cleanup, I'm assuming you're contracting directly with say, groundwater remediation folks, or is that, so would we have an administration fee off of that, or is it directly passed through to a local entity, or?
Madam Chair, was anything further? It depends on the contracts. In the case of the Williams money, for example, the $1 million settlement, we were able to pass all of that money through to the schools. The Lakeview contract itself, I'd have to double check on. I suspect that's one where we had an administrative cost.
And one last question, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you. And if it's federal funds, is there usually half an administration fees that goes along with that contract?
Chair Representative, yes. And often it's there's a formula that applies to a whole class of federal contracts that we have, and typically the grant or the contract itself will have a limit on what the state administrative fee is.
Senator Nelson.
Yes, thank you. Could you explain to me the public purpose charges, where they fit into, how much they are, how they're broken out? I'm looking at all kinds of different figures here. I'm confused.
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, the public purpose charge is a 3% charge on the utility bills of everyone who is served by Pacific Power or Portland General Electric. So it's the two large investor-owned utilities. That raises, these are rough numbers, about $70 million a year. 10% of that money goes to education service districts to pass on to schools for energy audits, and then energy measures that we provided information to the committee on. Another, I think it's about 7%, goes for low-income weatherization, and another, I think it's about 5%, goes for low-income housing. Those two programs are operated by the Department of Housing and Community Services. Then the remainder of the money, which is about $50, $55 million a year, is directed by the Public Utility Commission to the Energy Trust, and that's a nonprofit organization that was established specifically to administer those funds that covers other energy conservation and renewable resource efforts that previously had been operated directly by the utilities themselves. The Energy Trust operates through a number of contracts that involve different entities. I think in some it involves the utilities to some extent, but primarily other contractors, and covers various conservation programs.
And would we be correct if we were to assume that those funds were accounted for in the other funds non-limited category?
Madam Chair, no. None of that money directly comes to our budget. The only role that the department has two roles. We work with the schools to provide services on scheduling the audits and verifying the qualifications of the auditors. And the schools provide us our costs for doing that and related activities. And then we also certify for large customers, large industrial and commercial customers. They have the option, instead of paying the public purpose charge, they can do what's called self-direction or investing in their own facilities, and that reduces the amount of public purpose charge they have to pay. Under the law, we're directed to certify that the investments are made on bona fide cost-effective projects and that they qualify under the law for that discount. And under the law, we're allowed to be reimbursed for the costs that we have to process those applications. But no public purpose money comes to us directly other than through those two areas.
I have one that I'd like to ask. I'm like right now looking at this matrix and comparing the 0305 legislatively approved budget with the 0507 governor's budget, and there are significant increases in other funds and in other funds non-limited. Can you talk to us about where those increased funds come from and what the purposes of them are?
Yes, Madam Chair. First, the other funds non-limited is the package for higher education projects that we discussed in the first hearing, and that those projects were listed, I think, on page
30 of your materials.
That's package 300.
Yes, package 300. And that constitutes about $28 million of projects at the different higher education campuses. So that's the increase in terms of the non-limited. In terms of the limited, where we're seeing increases in a couple of areas here. If I have a moment here, we're seeing one, the Williams money that was we've talked about a couple of times. That's money related to settlements from investigations of price gouging during the electricity crisis 2000-2001. That was not anticipated in our budget. Our department received $1 million out of the $15 million, and that money is being used for schools. So some of that money is being carried over into the next budget. We're also anticipating another settlement, probably of about that same amount in terms of coming to schools. There's two or three cases out there worth another $10 to $15 million that we're very close to settlement on. We're anticipating that there may be similar distributions as there were previously, and that's the basis for that estimate.
Relating also to price fixing?
Yes, yes, different companies.
Okay.
I believe, well, I have to double check on which company. So El Paso is one. Duke is one, another one, I believe. Number of the wholesalers of natural gas at the time. And then we're also anticipating an increase in renewable energy wind projects coming through the siting process, large projects, two or three large projects, and that and those applicants pay for, you know, the cost of review. And so those are the principal areas for the increase in other funds.
Thank you. Senator Yost?
Just coming back to the public purpose charge again. Who follows that money? I mean, we're talking about $70 million. Is it just a pass-through for you guys? Or how does it even show up in your budget?
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, it doesn't, because it doesn't show up in our budget.
I mean, it shows up in all these reports, though, that you talk about.
Right.
This thing that we got out from the Department of Energy.
Which report are we looking at?
Well, let's see, it's the Phase 2 materials.
Okay. Well, that's a list of we included the schools that receive the money directly. But that money doesn't come through our budget.
Doesn't need to have nothing to do with it?
In terms of the budget, no. It goes, it's dispersed, it's collected by the utilities, and under the allocations, they write a check, I don't know if it's one check or multiple checks, to the Energy Trust, and then the education service districts, and to Department of Housing for their low-income programs.
The
Department of Housing, presumably that would show up in housing's budget. I don't know the details. The education service districts, I'm not really familiar with the budgeting there as to how that fits into state budgeting. But the bulk of the money, this $55, $60 million a year, goes directly to this non-profit entity that's not a state entity, so it doesn't show up on the state budget books. Doesn't pass through the PUC, for example, than it would.
Ms. Brown had some comments on this also.
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, I think the agency has covered most of it, but I just wanted to clarify that the bulk of the money does go to the Energy Trust. The Department of Energy and the Public Utility Commission jointly select an independent entity to produce this biennial report, which is a summary that you have as part of your packet, and I believe it was Echo Northwest that did it in the past.
Correct.
And so they went through and did the compilation report and submitted it. So that's the paperwork that you are seeing. And just to clarify, the public purpose money, if you will, that's in this agency is an indirect. They work with schools to administer the programs, but the education service districts are getting their portion of the public purpose directly and then reimburse this agency for any applications and technical consultation that they would provide, similar to the services that they would provide to anyone else. For that.
They just charge
them. Right.
Senator Bates?
I think the question we're trying to get to is, where is the $70 million going? and some of it's going back to those companies for improvements, which you are sometimes auditing to see if they're complying with law, and you're auditing other uses of the money to make sure it's complying with the law, I'm assuming, if you're asked to by specific agencies. The real question is, whereas that's up to 10% of the money, not all of what you get for auditing, but being used for auditing and improvements. So the question is, where's the other 90% of the $70 million going? It's not really in your agency, so it's not really your responsibility.
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, that's correct. PUC does have responsibility, and they do oversee those funds or how they're being spent. And then this independent contractor that Monica referred to does a summary each year of how all the public purpose money is spent.
Representative Greenfield.
I just got a little background comment on that for Representative Senator Nelson. The fee, since I have a district that's completely involved with this public purposes charge, before the public purposes charge was, it's not a new charge. It used to be incorporated into my utility bill, but it was included in the fee that either Pacific Core or PG would charge. And it was I don't want to say hidden, but it basically wasn't broken out as a separate 3%. And they used it for they decided where these projects were going to happen. In other words, it's the same amount that's, I think, the same amount that's being collected, but it was the companies themselves that made the decision. And now it's an independent third-party organization. And our schools and some of the other public, participants are benefiting, which didn't before. And so I see it as we actually have more control over the use of that money than we did before. And I just,
So my comment would be we're spending $4 million to administer what was being done before. Maybe we've added some to schools, but somehow we've lost $4 million administrative costs here. That's neither here nor there.
Okay. I think that concludes the discussion around the budget detail. I do have one person who has requested to make public comment on this, and so I will now call forward Sandy Flicker. Good afternoon, Ms. Flicker. Thank you for joining us today.
Good afternoon. Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, for the record, my name is Sandy Flicker, and I represent the Oregon Rural Electric Cooperative Association. There are 18 electric cooperatives in Oregon, and we serve approximately 10% of the population, but only about 65% of the geographic mass, but only about 10% of the population. So we have the least dense service territory of any of the electric utilities in Oregon. I appreciate the opportunity today to make some brief comments regarding the Department of Energy budget. But first of all, I want to thank Mr. Graney for the fine job that I believe that he does in managing the agency. He's always very responsive to questions and concerns that we might have and requests for information. We work very closely with the Department of Energy, have worked very closely with him on renewable development, and very much support their efforts. In fact, the co-ops last fall asked Mr. Graney and David Van Hoff from the governor's office to join us for a field trip out to the east side of Oregon to visit some of our very small co-ops and view firsthand the density issues that we face. And in fact, we visited the Condon Wind Farm out there, which was quite interesting. So he does understand, Mr. Graney does understand the geographic challenges that are facing Oregon's co-ops, and we appreciate that very much. But I'm here today to discuss a budget policy issue that is of great concern to us. This past year, the Bonneville Power Administration ratepayers, who are electric cooperative customers, have been involved in defending themselves in lawsuits in which the governor of Oregon has joined the plaintiffs. These lawsuits have been over summer spill and over the 2004 biological opinion. BPA ratepayers pay over $500 million annually. I think it's about $525 million annually in programs to mitigate the impacts of dams on endangered fish. These costs are expected to increase next year by over another $100 million. We recently received an accounting from the Attorney General's office, and I have provided you with a copy of that that details the expenditures that the Attorney General has spent to represent the governor in these lawsuits. And a portion of these funds have come from the Department of Energy, as you can see. It is not the the major portion, but a portion has come from the Department of Energy. As you know from this other attachment that I have provided, Oregon Electric Co-ops pay an annual assessment to the Department of Energy called the Energy Supplier Assessment Fund. The co-op portion of that fund for 2003 was $140,153. The assessment is based on a formula for all energy suppliers in the state. We pay that assessment as requested every year, but we really don't have a lot of opportunity to weigh in on how those funds are spent. One of those opportunities is here in front of Ways and Means Committee. But it was quite disturbing for us to find out that the Department of Energy was required to participate financially in these lawsuits, and that the money that came from the Energy Supplier Assessment Fund. And I have provided you also with some information that Mr. Graney provided me with regarding the question of where did the money for the lawsuits come from, and it was from the Energy Supplier Assessment Funds.
Sandy, what lawsuit is this referring to?
There were two lawsuits that the Attorney General's office provided us with information on, and it was the lawsuit over summer spill about a year ago.
That's the one that has the Y. This one.
Yes, this is what the Attorney General provided us with.
Okay.
And then the lawsuit that he is currently engaged in over the biological opinion. So it was. I asked for information on those two specifically.
Isn't the biological opinion?
It's both the summer spill and the it was the cost to date for engagement in that lawsuit. So it's not complete, but it was the cost to date. And
what is this exactly?
This is what Mr. Graney provided me with. It's the breakdown of the money that came from the Office of Energy, that went from the Office of Department of Energy to the Attorney General's office for their participation in the lawsuit.
Okay, but this starts back in 2002.
So Mr. Graney provided me with information that was further back than what I was provided by the Attorney General's office. And Madam Chairman, I'm not really here to talk about the amount of money. Actually, I really would like to talk about the policy issue. Obviously, the Department of Energy did not pay a significant amount of money into these lawsuits, but I think the policy question that we have here is the money that was used for the participation of the Department of Energy came from consumer-owned utilities. At least a portion of that came from electric cooperatives. And these lawsuits are lawsuits that are basically being waged against BPA ratepayers. And so what has happened is that BPA ratepayers have been asked to pay through their ratepayer dollars for the governor's efforts to join in these lawsuits, and then in addition they are asked to be paying through their ratepayer dollars to defend themselves. So they're actually being asked to pay twice through the ratepayer dollars. And I think the issue, I know that the Ways and Means Committee this year has been, or this session, I've heard the term accountability. I think that there is a huge effort on the part of the legislature to account for, have a very open public accounting process for how money is spent in this state. And I think that's what taxpayers deserve. And we're asking you to also consider the needs of ratepayers. I think ratepayers deserve the same thing. They deserve an accounting for how their money is being spent. And, you know, when they are very concerned about their money being spent for lawsuits that they believe has a very significant financial impact on them. So I think there is a policy issue, and what I'd like you to consider is the fact that The legislature has no engagement in that part of the process, at least as far as I know. That's a decision made by the governor. He asked the agencies for the money. The money is then transferred to the AG. It's their participation. It's mandatory participation. And there's never an opportunity for the legislature to agree or disagree with whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. And customers who are paying that money also don't have an opportunity to weigh in on whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. And I'm really not here to dispute the merits even of the lawsuit. I'm not here to dispute the reasons for the lawsuit even. I'm here really to suggest to you that there is a public policy issue. And the policy issue is, how do we account for that money? Where is the opportunity to weigh in on whether that's a good thing or a bad thing for the people that pay the money? And our only recourse is to come to the legislature, to the folks that represent us, and say, we have a concern about this. This is a problem for us to be paying money to an agency that we believe does a lot of good things with the money that we provide them. But, and frankly, this isn't really an agency issue. The agency doesn't have a choice. Then the agency is asked to spend some of that money that we pay for an effort that we believe is not in our best interest. So I'm actually requesting that the subcommittee or the Ways and Means Committee, I guess the full committee, work with us to find a way to build some accountability into that process and build a process that deals with how that money is being spent, and look at it as a policy question of is that the right way to spend the money without any accountability or any opportunity for input, or is there a better way to do it? So I just thank you for the opportunity to bring to you an issue that is of grave concern to us, and request that we have an opportunity maybe to work with you on looking at some possibilities to address it. Thank you very much.
Questions or comments? Representative Shoffer.
Thank you. You know, one thing about this job is you frequently get the opportunity to disagree with people you really like. I share your frustrations, Ms. Flicker. Sandy, you know, it's no secret that I share your frustrations with all this. I guess my question is, I had heard from one of the nice staff people at the governor's office that they are meeting this week with the three other governors from the Northwest, or next week, to try and hopefully come to some consensus on these issues. Do you have anything to share with us on where that's at or not?
Madam Chair and Representative Shoffler, unfortunately I don't. And the reason I don't is because it's been a completely confidential process. We have not been engaged in the discussions with the state and the federal agencies in any way, shape, or form, and we have actually gotten very, very limited information about what is being discussed in that process because it's completely confidential. I wish I could share with you where that's at, but unfortunately I'm not able to.
Senator Bates.
Just because I'm a little confused here, I ask a question, and if it's appropriate, tell me. If the governor's lawsuit is successful and they recover funds, where will those funds go to? Will they go back to the rate payers, or go to the general fund? What would be the result of that? Those monies collected, if they in fact are collected?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, in this particular situation, it's not a matter of collecting money, I believe. It's a matter of spending more money. The lawsuit is about spending additional funds, additional BPA ratepayer funds for salmon programs. In the case of the Williams settlement, which was actually on behalf of ratepayers in Oregon, the money that was collected was distributed back, thankfully, to the ratepayers. But in this particular situation of summer spill and the biological opinion, the lawsuit isn't about recovering money for damages. The lawsuit is over whether or not what the federal agencies have proposed in terms of salmon mitigation programs is sufficient. And there is definitely a difference of opinion about that. So I wish there was an opportunity for a return of funds, but it's actually about spending more money, and that money comes directly out of the pocketbook of BPA ratepayers. That is where the money all comes from.
Question. Did the ratepayers have any advantage as a result of the summer spill? Do they have lower rates, or did it affect their rates at all by allowing that water out of the dams?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, we lost that issue. We were working very hard for a compromise to reduce summer spill. The governor joined in a lawsuit after those negotiations had taken place, and I don't mean to insinuate that that he was part of any agreement, but after we had come to an agreement with the federal agencies about a reduced summer spill program, the governor engaged in a lawsuit with Earth Justice to stop any decrease in summer spill. So about $80 million was lost to BPA in terms of revenue that would have been generated had we stopped summer spill. With the compromise program, I think it was about $35 million that we could have received as revenue that, yes, would have impacted the rates of BPA customers, because BPA is a cost-based agency. Every cost that they incur is passed on to ratepayers. So every savings is also passed on to ratepayers.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Are you going to come back at one of these other budgets and bring the same issue to you? And which agency is the most successful? Will we see you again?
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I think you probably will see me again not necessarily on this specific issue, but I will be very clear to tell you that the reason that I'm here today is clearly because of the path from the energy supplier assessment to the AG, and clearly because we pay the energy supplier assessment. I would not be here today testifying in front of you if there was another source of funds being used for this lawsuit. But I'm here to tell you that I think there's a policy issue about using this energy supplier assessment money for a lawsuit against the people that pay the money. That's the policy issue that I'm here today to talk about. I won't be here to talk about DEQ or OWEB or those agencies where monies come from in addition, because we don't pay into those agencies. We don't support those agencies financially other than possibly through some fees, but we support the Department of Energy financially through our energy supplier assessment, and that's all it is. It's not a fee, it's not a tax, it's an assessment that basically supports that agency and the programs that they operate. So that is why I am here today, because of that particular interest in following that money.
Very briefly, and whether it had been $80 million in more power generated or $35 million, some of that money was going to be put into fish mitigation as well. Isn't that correct?
Absolutely. Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, the compromise was to reduce summer spill and put a significant amount of that money that could have been saved into other fish mitigation programs that some biologists believe were more beneficial for the salmon.
Representative Krieger.
Chair, I believe we had asked the Department of Fish and Wildlife when they came back to describe in detail what, in their opinion, by their science, the benefit was to what fish, what species, which runs. I believe Mr. Ball is going to do that when he comes back so we can see what we bought for those dollars.
Any further comments? Thank you very much, Mr. Ball.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for taking the time to talk with us today. And with that, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 5511 and open a work session on Senate Bill 5511. And Ms. Brown, can you take us through the LFO recommendation?
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, since you've completed much of the work on performance measures, I would recommend that we jump and do that first,
okay,
if that doesn't throw you off too far. So that would be the last page of the work session recommendations memo.
And the Chair would accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendations as modified by the committee for the performance measures.
So moved.
Motion's been made. Is there discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, that motion is carried.
Okay, Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, since we have a couple of new members, let me hit some high points quickly. In the technical budget development process, there are two types of packages that are done. One is essential package, one is a policy package. Essential packages are your technical inflationary adjustments. We are not asking you to approve those individually today, so what you're seeing outlined here in the memo are the policy packages only. So I quickly go through those if that's acceptable.
And could you tell us why we are not being asked to work on the first part of it?
One, Madam Chair, is very technical, and it appears in every state agency. There were no unique essential packages in this agency's budget, so it's the standard inflation. I guess if the subcommittee would like to handle them individually, we could do that. Essentially, the standard inflation rate was 2.4% that was applied to line items in the service and supply and capital outlay. The personal service adjustments are based on the compensation plan and roll up on every position that is in the agency's budget.
I think that probably
so that's, that covers it. If you want to go through it in detail, we can.
No, let's call that one.
There's a sense that we
want
to move on. So let's go through the policy packages. The first package was a package proposed by the budget and management analyst. Again, it was recognizing savings to the services and supply budget from the Smart Buy initiative that is part of the Department of Administrative Services, and doing some fund shifts that was talked about earlier today about how they're getting more federal realigning the federal and other fund revenue sources that they're getting. So this package was not known about when the agency presented their budget last April, so this is kind of a technical adjustment as well. So LFO is just recommending that this be approved. It seems to align with their revenue forecast by funding source.
Discussion on package 090. I would accept a motion to approve the acceptance of package 090.
So moved.
So moved. I have the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection to the motion. That's been adopted. That's one to package 200.
Package 200, the agency is requesting the establishment of seven permanent full-time positions and reclassifying three other positions to address workload needs. The recommendation from LFO is to approve five permanent full-time positions. These are replacing limited duration positions that have been approved for several biennia. And approve the three reclassifications. These reclassifications have been reviewed by DAS Human Resources, and they concur with the classification. The second part of the recommendation is to approve one limited duration full-time position to support renewable energy and emerging energy technologies. This is a new position. They don't currently have a limited duration doing this function. In this program area, several people in the agency are starting to work in the emerging technologies area. The limited duration recommendation is to have the agency begin to develop that on a policy-wide, work with the new energy siting applications and see what kind of workload is really there, and then ask them to report back to the emergency board in November 2006 on the status of those projects and what workload is really coming forward and how quickly in this area. And then the third component of the package this is a standard adjustment that you're going to see in agencies' budgets, is the PERS rate reduction by just under 1%.
Committee, the only issue that I have with this is that I think that we are trying to send to Oregonians a message that we're trying to keep Oregon government lean and mean, and that establishing permanent positions at this point in time is maybe not advisable in attaining that goal. So my recommendation would be to keep all of the positions as limited duration positions at this point. Senator Bates.
Madam Chair, could I ask a question to the agency on this?
Mr. Greeney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I understand the chair's position here. We're going to be looking at general fund programs and cutting a lot of programs and cutting FTEs as we go through our budget the next couple of months. Their point is very valid. And maintaining these as temporary positions, is that going to make any significant difference in your ability to function over the next year and a half, 18 months until the emergency board meeting that's been recommended in November of 2006?
Well, bear in mind, though, that there's two different things going on here. The recommendation in the first part is for five positions that are currently limited duration to move those to full time.
Okay.
Then those are not involved in the e-board at all.
Sorry, let me correct that. Then that would be a time we'd probably have a chance to discuss it if we wanted to. But is this going to make any significant difference in your ability to function as an agency?
Madam Chair, Senator Bates, I would be concerned about continuing as limited duration. That would affect, I think, our other funds limitation. As I understand the difference between limited duration and permanent positions. Although you're shaking your head no.
Madam Chair, I don't believe that this would not affect your other funds expenditure limitation. It will the limited duration versus permanent positions simply affects the status of the position and whether it would have to be reauthorized in the 07-09. So it has potentially implementation issues for the employee that's sitting in it and how comfortable they are with that position being ongoing.
And these positions are in the areas that we have seen consistent increases, a doubling and a doubling again of the volume of our tax credits, both our business energy tax credit and our residential tax credit. So I am concerned that we give some certainty to the staff involved there. That'd be my only caveat, Madam Chair.
Have these being limited duration positions?
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, they vary. Let me quickly find the discussion. One program technician that was primarily working in the area of business energy tax credit has been limited duration since October 2003. A program tech one in the conservation division, primarily working on state buildings and school programs since April 2002. Program tech two, again primarily in the school program, has been limited duration since July 2001. And office specialist that is working on supporting the two boards, the Energy Facility Siting Council and Hanford Cleanup, and doing some of the emergency response work, has been limited duration since April 2002.
Madam Chair, these five positions were ones that we came in last biennium requesting continuation, and you agreed to continue them, but only as limited duration that time.
Further discussion?
What was the opinion?
Senator.
Go ahead, let's
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, LFO's recommendation was to make them permanent simply because of the long-term nature that they have been extended. I did look at the workload statistics that the agency provided on their energy tax credit and on their facility siting, and the workload did not seem to be going away in the near future unless you did significant program changes, which don't seem to be under consideration. So it was our recommendation to make them permanent rather than continuing to re-up them every time. That is certainly your choice.
Madam Chair, I would say I don't have an objection to the new position being limited duration, if that helps.
Matt.
Chair, are there any vacancies in your in these FTEs? And in our Department of Education, we sort of mixed around there. We thought it came up with 26 vacancies.
Information on vacancies, Ms. Brown.
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, I did review their vacancy report. They do have two positions that are currently vacant and in recruitment, I believe. There are no long-term, like greater than 6 months, vacant positions. They have a minor technical recruitment because of the nature of the position, so they had to do a second recruitment to fill the position, but they don't have anything that's over 6 months old when I looked at the report a couple of weeks ago.
Representative Shoffman.
Thank you briefly, Madam Chair. Being in the building trades, everything's limited duration. You're always limited duration, so I can understand that. I can understand the families, their concern, but whether we call it limited duration or full time, can I look these human beings in the face and say there's going to be plenty of work if the workload's consistent and, as I understand, growing? Do they really have a lot to worry about as far as a long-term commitment, as far as employment goes with your department? Do you feel that way, whether we call it full-time or limited duration?
Well,
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, from our perspective, no, as a, in terms of at the work being there. But I guess it would put us in the position of next biennium likely coming in and asking for these limited duration positions to be extended again. I have received expressions of concern from some of the members that a limited duration position should be limited in duration. We shouldn't be coming back and extending them. So we're kind of put in a quandary here of you know, the workload certainly has been consistent and has been increasing over time. So I guess my strong preference would be to have you extend them as permanent. My request.
Well, I think I made my preference.
You vote. I don't, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair,
I think what I'm looking for is to kind of poll the committee and just find out where people are at on the issue.
Madam Chair, my first feeling is I go along with what LFO says because they know this organization better than I do, and I appreciate your position. But I also appreciate what the chair is saying in that we're just coming out of a very difficult time financially. We're not out of that position. We have other budgets to look at that are going to be very serious. We're going to be cutting other programs, which I think are very important. And I would like to, I think I'm going to come down the side of the chair this time and go for a limited duration for just one more go around. And I'm sorry, but I think that's the best way. We have to send a message. Not, I don't think much outside this building, frankly. I think there's a lot of people outside the building who are going to watch this, but there's people inside the building who are going to. And we have some very hard stuff to do ahead of us. And to start opening up and making permanent positions makes, even though it's other funds, not general fund money, makes me a little anxious. And I think waiting another 2 years, I'm sorry, I think your function will still continue. And if I'm here in 2 years, which is always questionable, I have a very limited duration position here.
He's a dirtbag.
I would say that I would commit it if we're in a situation at that time that the economy has improved as we expect it to, I would authorize it with a full acceptance. But right now, I think we've got to stay very conservative in these matters. I'm sorry. And also, sure. I don't mean to...
It's quite right.
I would agree with that. Madam Chair.
Representative Krupp, would you weigh in on this issue?
Oh, shucks. I was hoping I could get by without saying.
You've been really quiet today.
Scary, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
I really would have to echo the sentiments of Senator Bates also in that I think that the justification for making most of these positions full-time, or rather permanent, not full-time, they're already full-time, but rather permanent, is there, I say most of, I still don't know if the one position that is in the school program that's been there since 2001, at some point in time the school program is going to wind down, unless I'm missing the intent of it entirely. That doesn't mean that the agency won't continue to have additional growth. If you go back and look at the testimony, we had 400% growth in the Betsy Business Energy Tax Credit over the last 4 years.
Right. That's correct.
And it's huge growth. We've got 10 facilities that are in various stages of seeking to be sited in Oregon for biofuels issues. So, you know, plus a plethora of other energy, and if the federal government obviously changes the or re-ups the wind energy tax credit in coming out of Congress, likely to happen this year, and there'll be more wind power. So what I'm saying is there's all kinds of new drains that are going to be there on the demands on the agency personnel. I think we have to be careful in that we don't that we send a message saying we still want government to be small and efficient, and this is the right budget environment for us to continue with that message. So I would agree with the chair's assessment. I would say that in the next session, if their workload remains to be strong, as I predict it will be, that they will have an even more powerful argument to come to us and say, look, you've given us these limited duration positions for a number of sessions now. Our workload is increasing. They need to become permanent. And so I would say that it probably strengthens their argument to come back in 2 years. I certainly wouldn't want us to see less personnel operating at the agency because their workload has increased so much. And we're basically keeping status quo as we are. We're just not making them permanent for the moment. So I can concur with that. I'm a little concerned about it ultimately, for the same reason that Senator Bates is. I would concur with the chair at this point.
Thank you. Yeah. Representative Krieger.
I think almost everything's been said, but I think at some point, means we're just starting out with the first agencies. If you look at all the process we're going to go through in all of the agencies, you might end up making 100 to 150 new permanent employees, and that's how it's going to be reported in the newspapers. Legislature increases state employees by 150 during crisis legislative sessions. So I'd rather keep this limited duration, and that's not to say that these aren't good people, and they aren't needed, and they aren't valued, because they are.
Representative Shaw.
I'm with you, Madam Chair. It's all been said. 6-1, half dozen the other.
Let's go ahead then and consider that those will remain as five limited duration positions. And then let's go ahead and talk about the second part of the recommendation, which is to add
Madam
a
Chair.
Limited duration position
Madam
to
Chair.
Work on the renewable
the gentleman
energy.
Gentlemen out in the audience.
I'm sorry. Please come forward.
That's the guy that has to
Mr.
do the budget reports. once again, Jim Gore's budget and management. I just want to ask a question real quick, a clarifying question with this, if I may. Is your intention with this is to make them limited duration, but not, I'm not clear, I want to double check on the limitation issue, but not to decrease the limitation, but just to set things with the limited duration of the positions. Is that correct?
The intention is, instead of making them permanent positions, to continue them as limited duration positions and not make any other changes.
Okay.
That's helpful, Madam Chair.
Okay, so with reference
so
to...
So then that means, Madam Chair, then
yes.
that the other funds, $618,000 and other funds, still needs to be approved if they're continued as limited duration then?
Madam Chair and
so
Representative, that's correct. The $618,500 that's listed here on the memo is inclusive of the three components that are listed in the recommendation.
Okay.
And changing the status from permanent to limited duration does not impact these numbers in any way.
Okay, so take us through the second piece.
Part two, the agency had requested two new additional positions to work in renewable energy and emergency energy technologies. LFO was recommending one of them be added because in discussions with the agency thought that there was still some policy work and some community work to be done, and I was unclear, quite frankly, on the immediate need of all the workload and whether two positions were needed at this immediate time. So that is why the recommendation there is to bring on the principal contributor to work in the policy and development of this program area. I think the agency is considering doing some shuffling some duties within this to focus on this area. And so the recommendation was to have them report back and make it a limited duration so that you could have this discussion again next session on how much is needed in this program.
And I think that all of us are very interested in the renewable energy options that are developed and developing, and I personally support this package, this part of this package.
One limited and one full-time?
Only one limited duration position.
One limited full-time duration. One limited full-time, one limited duration full-time position. Got myself going. One person full-time, but limited duration.
Correct.
Thank
Correct.
You.
Okay, so do I hear anyone?
I'm all right with that, ma'am.
Okay, great. And then
the third component is a standard adjustment that we're now anticipating the PERS rate to be lower than what was assumed when the governor developed his budget. So a 0.89% reduction on PERS.
Madam Chair, and Monica, quick question. Is in the budget here, is there, as in some other budgets we've seen, is there a PERS bond
component to the budget here that's an additional expenditure.
Madam Chair and Representative Krupp, part of the base budget in the essential packages that we didn't go through individually, yes, there is the assumption, the pension obligation bond, and it is in every agency, and I think the current rate is 6.5% of personal services or something in that area.
Very good.
So, yes, it is inclusive.
Okay, so I would accept a motion to approve the LFO recommendation on package 200 with the amendment that the five permanent positions in the recommendation be changed to limited duration positions.
Madam Chair, I'd like to restate that the five limited duration positions we now have remain limited duration positions and we not move forward making them permanent. I believe that's what you wanted to say.
I will accept
and
that.
I would move that.
So will you move that?
And Madam Chair, clarification?
Yes.
Does that mean then that we're not approving the reclassification of the three reclasses?
Madam Chair, I'd move all everything. The only change I'd make to the recommendation and B, the package 200, is that the five present limited durations do not become permanent, but remain limited duration, and the rest of the package stands as stated.
And package 801 is not, we haven't got there yet.
Okay.
We're
all
only
right.
working on
okay.
package 200.
Well,
okay. I have a motion.
But I'm referring to in the three reclassifications. So there, it was five permanent full time and three reclasses.
Oh.
So
I read that and recognize right. that. I'm recommending we go forward with
we approve the reclasses.
The reclasses, the one limited, then one new limited duration, and they've been reported back in November 2006 on the new limited duration and the status of their projects, and include in that, as stated here, the three reclassifications, but the five limited duration positions, which they've asked to go to permanent, not take place.
Do I have any objection to the motion? I'm not taking any more discussion.
I have one. I don't want to ever have that issue more than two prescriptions.
Actually, it's easier.
Without objection, the motion is carried. Let's move on to package 801.
Madam Chair, package 801 is a new package recommended by LFO. Again, it is incorporating the PERS rate reduction for all of the existing employees, as separate from the package that was incremental on only those new employees. So this is rate reduction on existing employees, as well as in doing the position review as brought up by Senator Nelson, found that there was a portion of a position that currently doesn't have a designated use, and so we're recommending that it be eliminated by 0.31 FTE. Token take there. And so making a recommendation.
I don't know how anyone can say that LFO is not being thorough.
What does this person look like?
It's 0.31 of an FTE. That'd be interesting.
The individual, I believe, is a permanent employee that works part-time. So a further position designation for you.
Further confusing. Permanent employee who works part-time. That's different than the full-time permanent right. limit or limited duration. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Madam Chair, can I still move package 801, please? Let's take everybody's free.
I have a motion to accept package 801. Is there a discussion on the motion? Is there objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Let's move on.
Madam Chair, package 300 is in the energy loan program. The governor had proposed approximately $45 million in projects for the Oregon University system. There was a slight disconnect when the package came through for the higher ed. I think the projects only totaled $28.5 million. What this recommendation is doing is essentially eliminating this package from the Department of Energy's budget for the time being. This is in no way a commentary on the projects themselves.
Senator Bates, don't even think about leaving.
I'm not.
I'm
not. I want this to happen.
Okay.
This recommendation would simply defer the discussion to the education subcommittee to debate the merits of the projects within OSU's or OUS's Oregon University System's budget. If those projects are approved in that budget, the Ways and Means Committee will have the option of amending Senate Bill 5503, 2003, which is the bond bill, to reinsert the bond limit increase. And the agency can administratively increase their non-limited expenditure limitation if needed through Department of Administrative Services. So, again, not a comment on the projects themselves, just administratively removing this limitation and leaving the discussion to the other subcommittee. So that is LFO's recommendation to deny this package.
Accept a motion to accept the LFO recommendation on package 300.
So moved.
Have the motion. Any discussion on the motion? Objection? Motion's carried. Let's talk about the bill amendments.
Madam Chair, so with the previous approved packages, recommendations to amend Senate Bill 5511, which is the agency's budget bill, to modify line 6 by deleting the $18,137,637 and inserting the new total, $17,928,322 other funds expenditure limitation. And in Section 2 of their bill, deleting $5,446,266 from line 14 and inserting $5,433,356 for federal funds limitation.
I will accept a motion to amend Senate Bill 5511 with the LFO recommendations.
So moved.
Have the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection? Without objection, the motion is carried. And I would now accept a motion to move Senate Bill 5511 as amended to the full Joint Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation.
So moved.
Have the motion. Is there discussion on the motion? Objection? Without objection, the motion is carried. We need a carrier for the full and... Senator Bates, and Senator, would you also consent to carry on the Senate floor?
Certainly.
And Representative Krupp will carry on the House floor. Thank you very much. We have this will close the work session on Senate Bill 5511. Tomorrow, committee, we will begin a two-day hearing on the Marine Board. So you should have those materials in your office. And having no further business before this committee, unless you have someone else, Ms. Brown, this meeting is adjourned.